I figured out who would most likely end up running the investigating team, set him up with a young lady of the evening of my professional acquaintance, let nature take its merry course, recorded it all on film from every angle, and blackmailed him. How was I to know I'd picked one of the few really honest men left in a church these days? He told all, made a public confession, and I resigned from Gregor's employ before he could fire me. Bearing in mind that Gregor's displeasure tends to be expressed through sudden violence and assassins, I walked into Imperial News and asked for the first assignment they had on the far side of the Empire. And I ended up here. Sometimes I wonder if Gregor got to them first.
Maybe he did.
No, he's not that subtle. Being subtle was what he employed me for.
Well, maybe the winter won't be as bad as everyone says. It couldn't be that bad.
Didn't you watch the briefing tapes? The winters they have here could be officially classified as cruel and unnatural punishment. Snowstorms start with a blizzard and then escalate. The Eskimos have 127 different words for snow, and even they have never seen snow like they have here. In fact, if you brought an Eskimo here and showed him the snow, he would stop dead in his tracks and say, "Jesus Christ, look at that snow!" The winds in winter reach 300 miles an hour. It snows sideways.
Toby stopped and took a deep breath to calm himself.
Well, we'd better get undercover. Bring the equipment.
You brought it out here. You take it back. I do not fetch and carry. It's in my contract. I am a cameraman, and the only thing I carry is my camera. I told you that when we started out.
Oh, come on. You can't expect me to carry the lights and the monitor. Ugh, all you ever carry is that bloody camera. And if it weighs more than 10 ounces, I'll eat the bloody thing.
I don't move things. It's not in my nature. If you wanted a pack mule, you should have brought one.
Toby glowered at him, and then started gathering up the lights.
God, you people have got a good union.
Daniel and Stephanie Wolfe, in charge of Star Drive production, and therefore lords of all they surveyed on Technos 3, helped themselves to another large drink from the automated bar. As aristocrats, they were normally used to the luxury of human servants, but such frills and fancies had no place on a factory world, even for such distinguished visitors as the Wolfes. The drinks weren't very good, either. Stephanie threw herself sulkily into a large supportive chair that tried to give her a soothing massage before she turned it off. She didn't feel like being soothed. Cardinal Kasser was on his way, and she needed to feel in full control for the encounter. Daniel was stalking back and forth across the deep pile carpet like a caged animal, and she wished he wouldn't. It was getting on her nerves. Ostensibly, Valentine had sent them here to see that everything went smoothly until mass production of the new Star Drive officially began. He'd arranged a ceremony for the big day to be transmitted live across the Empire in prime time, to remind everyone, especially those at court, where Wolf money and power came from. Actually, Stephanie had arranged everything. She'd planted the idea for a ceremony in his mind, and then intrigued quietly but continually behind the scenes to ensure that she and Daniel would attend the ceremony rather than Valentine himself. A live broadcast would be the perfect opportunity to throw some heavy but undetectable spanners into the works, slow down, if not halt, Star Drive production, and generally make Valentine look incompetent. Such a high-profile failure might be just the lever she and Daniel needed to pry control of the factory away from Valentine and over to them. And then they'd see who really ran Clan Wolf. She looked up, and there was Daniel, still staring at the faux window, and she knew he wasn't seeing the storm outside.
Let it go, Daniel. Our father is dead and gone, and there's nothing you or I can do about it.
No, he's not dead.
Daniel would not turn away from the storm.
You saw him in the court. His body's dead. But those bastard AIs on Shub repaired it. Daddy's still alive in there, trapped in a decaying corpse. He recognized me, spoke to me. We have to rescue him. Bring him home.
What you saw was just a ghost warrior. A dead body held together by servo mechanisms and run by computer implants. It was just a machine talking, imitating our father. A
No way am I buying medicine to help with my illness. Instead...
Dead. He doesn't need us anymore. Forget him.
I can't.
Daniel finally turned his head to look at her, and there was something in his face that gave Stephanie pause. His normally sulky mouth was set in a firm line, and his gaze was steady, determined.
For once, I'm not going to let you talk me out of something I know is right. If there's even a chance Daddy is still alive, I have to rescue him. I have to. I let him down so often when he was alive. I can't feel him now he's dead. You don't need me here. The sabotage is your plan. Kassa can take care of the rebel problem for you. He's got experience in things like that. I can't think about things like that anymore. The rebels don't matter. The factory doesn't matter. Wolves come first, always.
Stephanie heaved herself up out of her chair and moved quickly over to join Daniel before the window.
I need you here, Danny. You're my strength. Stay here with me, at least until after the ceremony. We can send agents out to locate our father and discover what his true state is. People with experience in these matters. And that way we can keep things quiet. After all, there are a lot of people with a vested interest in seeing our father doesn't return to head the family again.
She saw the decision in his eyes before he nodded reluctantly, and she sighed silently with relief.
If I'm going to stay, find something for me to do. I feel useless here.
Perhaps you'd care to work with my troops. Always room for another brave warrior in the service of the church.
They both turned around sharply, Daniel's hands clenching into fists at being caught unawares. Stephanie nodded coolly to Cardinal Kasser. She wouldn't give him the satisfaction of appearing flustered, even if she wasn't sure how much he might have overheard. The Cardinal stood grandly in the open doorway, his chin held high. He was wearing full battle armor, even in the supposed safety of the factory's private quarters, which might have been down to church paranoia, or maybe a veiled insult to the wolves, in that he didn't trust them to ensure his safety. Stephanie thought he was most likely wearing it because he thought it made him look strong and soldierly. In which case, it was almost successful. The great bas-relief crucifix on his chest tried hard to draw the eye, but Kasser's ravaged face would not be ignored. Half eaten away by acid, the scarred side of his face looked more like a skull than a living countenance, even down to the gleaming teeth visible through the rents in his cheek. Stephanie managed a gracious smile but didn't move, and stood close beside Daniel so he wouldn't either. Let Kasser come to them. The Cardinal was late, but she'd expected that. Kasser was the kind of man who always kept people waiting, just to show how important he was. He needed little victories like that to sustain him, especially since being ordered to Technos III. Officially, it was an opportunity. The Church had sent him a small army of the faithful and a dozen elite Jesuit commandos to help the Wolf forces defeat the rebel terrorists. The Church of Christ the Warrior didn't normally do favors for the aristocracy, let alone Clan Wolf, but like everyone else, the Church's future power was dependent on gaining access to the new star drive. Those who got there first would have a temporary but very real advantage over those who did not. And the Church had not got where it was by ignoring possible advantages. Kasser especially had no love for the wolves, but nonetheless he had lobbied almost savagely for the posting. The war on Technos III was a chance to show what he could do as a commander of troops, and that was, after all, the fast track to advancement within the Church. Piety was all very well, but it was victory in arms that got you promoted. They stood looking at each other for a long moment, all three with their own private thoughts, none of them willing to make the first move. Finally, Stephanie took one step forward and extended a hand to Kasser. He took a step forward, accepted the hand, and bowed curtly over it. His handshake was firm, but brief. Daniel stayed where he was and nodded briefly. Kasser nodded back.
Welcome to Technos III, Cardinal. Sorry about the weather, but if you don't like it, stick around and something else will come along shortly. The weather here changes its mind like a village priest caught between two sins. I trust your men are settling in comfortably?
My men are preparing for their first assault on the rebel positions. Comforts can wait. You've let the terrorists get away with far too much, but given the small size of your forces, I can't say I'm surprised. Why haven't you pressed some of the factory workers into service? I can supply whatever arms and armor may be needed.
I think not, Cardinal. All the workers here are clones, bred and designed solely for factory work. And you don't give clones weapons.
Kasser shrugged carelessly to cover his faux pas.
As you wish. My troops are more than enough to get the job done. Now, Daniel, what do you say? Shall I find a place for you in our ranks?
Wolves don't fight for other people. We fight for ourselves, always.
A silence fell that could have been awkward, and then the tension was broken as Toby the Troubadour and his cameraman Flynn came bustling through the open door.
Morning, one and all. Isn't it a perfectly awful day? Hope I'm not interrupting anything vital, but I really do need to get some footage of the Cardinal meeting his hosts. That kind of thing always plays well with the audience, and it'll make a good introduction to the campaign to come. Don't worry, I'll keep it short and to the point. I'm sure you've all got things you'd rather be doing.
Is this really necessary?
I'm afraid so. Public relations can be a bore and a bind, but we can't do without it. Public acclaim can often get you things that nothing else can. The Star Drive ceremony will be an important event, and I want it covered very thoroughly. After all, absolutely everyone will be watching. Grit your teeth and bear it, Daniel. It'll soon be over.
That's the spirit. Cardinal, if you care to stand between the wolves, make a nice group for the camera.
Kasser glowered at him, but moved obediently, as directed, to stand between Stephanie and Daniel. And though they stood close together, none of them so much as nudged another with their elbow. Toby bustled around them, raising an arm here, squaring a shoulder there.
All right, people, just hold a pose while Flynn gets the lighting right, and then we'll do a short interview. Nothing complicated, just how glad you all are the Cardinal's here, that sort of thing. Fake the smiles if you have to. You are aware, Shrek, that your uncle is currently being investigated by the Church on charges of sedition and corruption on many levels? Nothing to do with me. You can haul him off in chains for all I care. I'll even supply the chains. Just give me some warning so I can get the rotten fruit concession.
He is the head of your family. You owe him allegiance. Have you no honor?
Of course not. I'm a journalist.
We will, of course, want to see all reports in their entirety before they can be transmitted, so that they can be checked for bias and possible inaccuracies.
The Church censors will also examine all footage to check for blasphemies or disrespect. Standards must be maintained.
Toby kept smiling, though his cheeks were beginning to ache from the strain.
Of course. Whatever you wish. Don't worry about inconveniencing me. I'm used to working with people looking over my shoulder.
He fussed the three of them about some more, partly to get the best grouping for the camera, and partly just because he could. He'd expected some kind of censorship, but he could see that getting anything interesting off Technos 3 was going to take a lot of hard work, a little subtlety, and every dirty trick in the journalist's handbook. Still, when in doubt, let the material go over their heads. They can't censor what they don't recognize. Of course, he couldn't hope to make much of a splash just covering the events leading up to the Star Drive ceremony. The real story lay in covering the Technos 3 conflict, the Wolf and Church forces versus the rebel terrorists. And he was going to cover it, despite anything the Wolves and the Church could do to stop him. He looked back at Flynn, who nodded briefly to show he was ready. The camera on his shoulder studied the three dignitaries with its red owl eye, linked into Flynn's eyes through his comm implant, so that he saw what it saw. Daniel and Stephanie and Kasser smiled determinedly at the camera, all friends together, ready for their interview. As in all politics, individual problems disappeared in the need to present a solid front to a common enemy. The Church ship Divine Breath hung in orbit above Technos 3, comfortably far above the seething weather, ostensibly on guard, but mostly just goofing off in the absence of the Cardinal and his Jesuit enforcers. After all, they had nothing to do but watch a few censors while they waited for the Cardinal's troops to make short work of a few native discontents. Easy work. Everyone knew there wasn't a rebel born who could stand against trained troops of the faithful. So a soft duty for once, and the crew took advantage of it. Which was why, when the giant Golden Hayden Man ship dropped suddenly out of hyperspace just above them, the whole crew took one look, and all but shit themselves. The huge ship hung above them, dwarfing the church vessel like a minnow next to a killer shark. The church crew snapped to attention at their posts, their hands moving desperately over the control panels. Shields slammed into place as guns powered up, and even those whose piety wasn't all it might have been found a sudden need to send up prayers of the most fervent kind. The Hagenman ship opened fire, and the Divine Breath shuddered as disruptor cannon hammered against their shields. The church ship fired back as fast as it could get its guns to bear, but the golden ship was impossibly fast for its size, and the crew of the Divine Breath knew they were hopelessly outclassed. They fought on anyway, not through their faith as much as because there was nothing else they could do. They couldn't drop into hyperspace without lowering their shields first, and the moment they did that, the Hagenman ship would blow them apart. The captain watched his shields go down one by one and called for more power, though he already knew he was using everything the ship's straining engines could produce. And then, as he searched frantically for something, anything to do to hold off the inevitable, the great golden ship suddenly disappeared back into hyperspace. Gone between one moment and the next. The captain blinked a few times, clutched at the crucifix on his uniform collar, and muttered a few Hail Marys. His ship had survived, but he was damned if he knew why. When he finally got his strength back, he canceled Red Alert, ordered full damage reports, and a complete sensor sweep of the surrounding space, just in case. He then wondered what the hell he was going to say to the Cardinal down below. He'd have to be told, even though he'd probably shout a lot. The captain and his crew worked hard on their various excuses and explanations, which was at least partly why they never noticed the heavily shielded escape pod that the Hagenman ship had dropped just before it disappeared. The pod hurtled down through the buffeting clouds and howling winds, battered this way and that by the storm's fury, but still somehow holding to its planned descent. Inside the pod, Jack Random, the professional rebel, Ruby Journey, the ex-bounty hunter, and Alexander Storm, the retired hero, clung desperately to their crash webbing and waited for the long drop into hell to end. The pod's outer hull groaned and squealed from the pressures it endured, and the sensors blinked out one by one till they were practically flying blind. The webbing cushioned and absorbed most of the shocks the pod encountered as it fell on and on into Technos 3's turbulent atmosphere, but the three rebels were still flung this way and that in the webbing's restricted arcs. Storm gritted his teeth and tried hard to hang on to his last meal. Random ignored it all, concentrating on what he was going to do when he finally landed. It was his first time back in the business of armed rebellion, and while he was quite definitely looking forward to it, he couldn't help but worry. It had been a long time, and he wasn't all the man he used to be. Either way, it wouldn't stop him giving this mission his all. And if in the end everything went to hell in a handcart, what better way for a professional rebel to die than with gun and sword in his hand and a pile of the enemy dead at his feet? Actually, he could think of a dozen better ways to make his final exit, mostly including a good wine and a bad woman, but he doubted he'd see any of them. Rebels rarely died in bed. Beside him, Ruby Journey was laughing and whooping loudly as she spun to and fro in her webbing, enjoying every minute of the trip down. Random smiled at her. How could you not love a woman like that? He checked the sensor panels again, but they were still out, the pod's sensor spikes torn away by shrieking winds. The proximity alarm sounded, harsh and strident, and Random braced himself. Either the ground was near, or they were about to crash into a mountain. Ruby whooped wildly. Storm had his eyes squeezed shut as though that would make any difference. Random sighed and tried to remember if there were any mountains on Technos 3. He didn't think so, but it would have been nice to be sure. The escape pod slowed desperately as the engines gave up the last of their power to cushion the landing. The three occupants were pinned helplessly in their webbing, listening to the inner and outer hulls cracking from the strain. The lights went out, replaced by the dull red glow of emergency lighting, and then the pod slammed into the metallic surface of Technos 3. It plowed a long path through the scattered scrap and debris, and finally came to a halt. against a massive protruding steel spur. The pod rocked back and forth and then settled itself. The sky was dark and forbidding. The winds were rising, and the first snows were beginning to fall. Inside the pod, Storm still had his eyes squeezed shut and was trying to remember how to breathe. Random lay slumped in his webbing and thought, not for the first time, that he was getting a little old for all this. Ruby Journey wiped at her bloody nose with the back of her hand and laughed happily.
Ha ha ha! Woo! That was great! Let's do it again!
Let's not.
Storm still didn't open his eyes.
I've had more fun in front of a firing squad. Next time, may I suggest we try and find a pod that's a little less past its sell-by date? Oh, God, I feel awful. Somebody please tell me we are safely down, because I'm not budging an inch until I'm sure the drop is over. And I want it in writing, with witnesses.
We're down in one piece, and that's all I ever asked from a landing. And for an escape pod that's been sitting around in a Hayden Man ship, unused and untested for decades, I think it did pretty well.
Now it tells us. I knew there was a reason why I gave up personal appearances as a rebel.
Shut up, Alex. Ruby, the sensors are all out. Crack open the hatch and see what's outside.
Ruby disentangled herself from her webbing, threw Random a professional salute, and made her way carefully over the slanting floor to the one and only hatch. Random clambered slowly out of his webbing, wincing at several new bruises and a few old injuries, and moved over to persuade Storm to open his eyes. Ruby cracked the hatch and pushed it outward. The metal resisted a moment and then gave way. A blast of cold air and swirling snow swept into the pod, along with just enough light to fade the crimson emergency lights to a rather sweet pink color. Storm opened his eyes.
Oh, wonderful. We've landed inside a birthday cake.
Shut up, Alex. Ruby, what's it like out there?
Cold. And there's enough snow coming down to make an army of snowmen. Which is just as well, since there's no sign anywhere of a welcoming committee.
Random scowled.
According to the handful of instruments that are still working, we are in the right place, more or less. No doubt our contacts will be here soon. They must have seen us come down. Hurry up, Alex. Shake a leg. We have revolutions to organize.
I never did like field work.
Storm moved painfully toward the hatch.
Undercover is a young man's work. Usually a young man who won't be missed too badly if it all turns pear-shaped.
Whinge, whinge, whinge.
Random half-pushed Storm out the hatch.
Anyone would think you weren't happy to be here, striking a blow for freedom and democracy.
Anyone would be right.
Storm shut up as the full force of the cold hit him. The three of them huddled together in the lee of the escape pod, sheltering from the driving storm. The jagged metal surface was already disappearing under a thick blanket of snow, and the rising wind was whipping up into a blizzard. They all turned up the heating elements in their clothes, hugged themselves fiercely, and beat their hands together. Random could feel Storm shivering violently beside him, and began to be concerned. Storm's old bones couldn't survive this cold for long. Random didn't feel the cold too badly, but he'd been through the madness maze.
This is undoubtedly a silly question, but why can't we get back inside the pod? It's got to be warmer than this.
The pod's heaters got knocked out along with everything else, and there's a small but definite chance the batteries are leaking poisonous gases. If you want to take your mind off the cold, keep your eyes open for our contacts. In this blizzard, they could walk right past us without noticing. But if they don't come soon, we may have to risk the gases. You can't handle cold like this.
I can handle any cold you can, you old fart. I'm only 6 years older than you, I'll have you remember.
Sure, Alex. Now shut up and conserve your strength.
Always wear a bossy boots, Jack.
How far are we from the rebel base?
Ruby tried hard to be tactful for once.
We don't know. They wouldn't tell us. Just gave us landing coordinates and told us we'd be contacted. I hate going into situations blind. I just hope the paranoid bastards find us before the Empire forces do. We were promised a distraction to keep them occupied somewhere else, but I'm growing less trusting by the second. I would also like to point out that I am losing all feeling in my extremities.
Don't worry. At your age, you don't use them for much anyway.
You could go off people, you know.
They fell silent for a while, the cold air searing their lungs. They huddled closer together, trying to share their warmth, eyes straining against the swirling snow. Dark outcroppings of metal showed dimly through the storm, but there was no sign of life anywhere. Random beat his gloved hands together and looked longingly at Ruby's thick furs over her leathers. He coughed and sneezed harshly. Something in the air was irritating his throat. Even allowing for the bitter cold, the air was thicker than he was used to, and it smelled as though someone else had breathed it first. The locals had assured him it was breathable once you got used to it. Random suspected it was an acquired taste. They'd said much the same about the changing weather, but Random wasn't convinced. The locals had also said the blizzard would make good cover for a landing. Random wondered if he'd be allowed to shoot the person who said that for criminal understatement. He looked across at Storm, and his concern grew. There was no color left in the man's face, and he was shuddering violently. Random gestured at Ruby, and she took off her furs and wrapped them around Storm. It seemed to help him a little. Ruby wouldn't feel the difference. She'd been through the maze, too. Random frowned. He still mostly remembered Storm as a tousle-headed young warrior, always laughing, ready to throw himself into the thick of things at a moment's notice. But that was a long time ago, and Random was shocked as he realized just how long. Storm had to be in his mid-50s by now, and the long years of struggle had not been kind to him. Random frowned and wondered if maybe he shouldn't have brought Storm with him after all. Storm had volunteered, but then he'd never been able to say no to Jack Random, who was no youngster himself anymore, even if he had been through the maze. Ruby suddenly pushed herself away from the shelter of the pod and stared out into the storm.
Heads up, people. Company's coming.
Can you see them?
Random stepped forward to stand beside her.
No, but I can feel them. They're coming this way.
Random concentrated, but couldn't feel anything. The maze had changed them all in different ways. The first dark shapes began to appear out of the snow, and Storm forced himself to move forward and stand with his friends. It was a matter of pride. There were 10 locals, finally, standing before them all wrapped in furs, their faces hidden behind leather and metal masks in the shapes of stylized animal heads, none of which Random recognized. Except to note they were all pretty damn ugly. One of the locals stepped forward, looked at the three of them, and then pulled aside his mask to reveal a grim, heavily bearded face. It was a hard-used face, and could have been any age. Several long scars marred his features, deep and pitted, and his eyes were dark and very cold.
Where are the rest of you?
We're all there is. You talk to us about the local situation, and if we're convinced, we'll contact the Underground and they'll send armed volunteers, weapons, and supplies. You understand there's a lot of calls on our limited resources. We have to be sure they go where they're most needed. I'm Jack Random. This is Ruby Journey and Alexander Storm. Give them plenty of room, they bite. Whom do I have the honor of addressing?
You're Random? I thought...
Yes, most people do. Just try and think of my age as experience on the hoof. Is there somewhere else we could continue this conversation? Somewhere a few degrees above absolute zero?
Of course. I'm Tall John. I command here. Follow me.
He pulled his mask back into place, turned, and set off into the storm without looking back. The locals moved off after him, as silently as they'd arrived. Random grabbed Storm and got him moving. Ruby took Storm's other arm, and the three of them stumbled off into the blizzard, hurrying as best they could to keep up with Tall John and his people. The pod was quickly lost in the snow behind them, and they soon lost all sense of direction. No matter where they looked, there was only snow, and the dark figures trudging on before them. Time passed, and the bitter cold of the wind cut at them like knives as the pressure of the winds increased. And then the dark figures suddenly began to disappear, one by one. The last turned and beckoned them forward. He pushed aside his mask, revealing Tall John's face again.
This is it. Welcome to the outer circles of hell.
He gestured at his feet, stepped forward, and descended into a gap in the snow that Random could only just make out through the blizzard. Random moved forward cautiously and suddenly found himself on the edge of a deep trench, some 6 feet wide, falling away deeper than his eyes could follow. He could just make out the steps cut into the near wall, and he followed the retreating Tall John down into the trench. Storm came next, slowly and very carefully, followed by Ruby. The trench turned out to be some 15 feet deep, with snow and slush already ankle-deep at its bottom. Tall John was waiting for them and gestured for them to follow him into one of the many narrow tunnels leading off from the far wall.